Bonnie Demarest, ABC number 039246, before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency to consider regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest. This hearing is before the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse, the Honorable Mr. David Neal, and my name is Louis Quinones. I'll be serving as the panel lead and the acting board chair for this hearing. I'll begin the hearing with the following summary. Mr. Demarest is 65 years old. He is serving a life prison sentence for murder in the first degree. The incident offense occurred on or about February 26, 1989. Mr. Demarest was approximately 33 years old at the time of crime. He was found guilty by jury trial on April 5, 1990, and sentenced on August 21, 1990. In 1990, he was also sentenced to 5 years for theft, the term of which has since expired. It should be noted that he has a criminal history dating back to 1973, including a wide variety of property crimes and prior convictions for sexual assault and failure to return as an inmate. The following is a synopsis of the offense in question, and I ask us to kind of bear with me because it is a very long statement, and I will not be reading the entire pre-sentence report. To move through from the beginning, I will arrive at the portion where the deceased was found at the crime scene. Since I'm approaching the scene, feet and the lower part of the human legs could be seen protruding from the ground. The body had been placed along the south bank of the wash behind a dead bush. Dirt had been pulled back on top of the body from above the bank. The tire tracks found had approached the scene from the east and stopped even width at approximately 15 feet to the north of the body. The vehicle would have had to leave the scene by reversing to return to the traveled portion of the wash. The body was excavated and determined to be that of a female. It was appeared to be in advanced state of decomposition. There appeared to be a pair of pantyhose tied around the neck, and the body was turned over to the medical examiner for transportation. To Tucson for post-mortem examination. On Friday, March 31st, 1989, the body of Diana Jane Johnson, age 17, was positively identified through dental x-rays and examination comparison. After the discovery of the victim's body, the police were contacted by Ron Larry Collins on April 8th, 1989. Mr. Collins stated that he was staying at the home of Ronnie Edward Demarest on April 28, 1989. He stated that on that date, Mr. Demarest had gone and had returned home sometime after 3 in the morning. Mr. Collins also spoke with the officers about some alleged burglaries that he and Mr. Demarest were involved in. With regard to the burglary cases, a search warrant was served on the Demarest residence on April 11, 1989. In the course of serving that search warrant, the items were found that might have related to the homicide. And I do apologize because that is just a synopsis from the event. Mr. Demarest has had considerable programming in the Arizona Department of Corrections, including sex offender treatment. According to Ames, he has no release plan. He has a moderate history of discipline from 1981 through 2018, with his last ticket a major on June 20th, 2018. This is his ninth hearing before the board. He has no letters of support, but we do have individuals in the hearing room today representing the victim. So at this point, having read the synopsis, I will ask the prosecutor in the room if she will approach the podium. And I'm doing this out of a formality, but I just want to make sure that we don't have any inmates, representatives inside the room. Doesn't appear to be so. Okay, so ma'am, can you state your name?
Absolutely. Good morning. My name is Karen Camarada. I'm a prosecutor with the Pinal County Attorney's Office.
Thank you, ma'am. Being as that this is a waived hearing, is there a particular order that you would wish to present any information to the board or with the victim's representatives?
Well, I guess it depends on what the board would prefer. I don't know if you would like me to speak first and then the victims and their representatives to speak, or if you would like them to speak first.
I think it would make sense if you speak first, and if there are individuals who wish to speak afterwards, we will certainly listen to them, and then the board will go into deliberation.
Okay. Obviously, I'm not the prosecutor who presented this case at trial. However, when we learned that the victim's family and next of kin would be present for the hearing, we did want to come down in person to speak to the board. When I reviewed the pre-sentence report in this case, obviously what Diana suffered is beyond words, and it's incomprehensible to me the amount she must have suffered. But what really struck me was the fact that she was killed on February 27th. Her body was not discovered until March 30th. That's over a month that her family, her mother, had to wonder where she was, if she was okay, every day going by, fearing the worst. There's a portion in the pre-sentence report where Diana's mother indicates that she got a call after the body was found. She got a call asking what Diana was last wearing, and she said she knew at that point that things were not going to end well. A mother and a father missing their 17-year-old daughter for over a month, in my mind, that should be, I wish that were an entirely separate crime that we could accuse the defendant of, because he inflicted so much suffering in addition to what he did to Diana. Diana herself was 17 years old. Her life was so full of promise. Who knows what she could be doing right now if she were still here, whose lives she could have affected for the better. Her family is here, and no doubt they will speak to the type of person that she was. But she will never have that opportunity because of this inmate. This inmate has an extensive criminal history. Particularly striking is his conviction for sexual assault. And according to the pre-sentence report, it looks like the facts are somewhat similar to the facts in this case, only worse because they involved multiple individuals who committed the sexual assault. This inmate has indicated in the pre-sentence report that if he had the opportunity to escape, he would, because he had nothing to lose. And in his disciplinary history, he actually has two prior infractions for escape. And as the board mentioned when we first started, his most recent disciplinary infraction was from June, this past June, so within the last year, and it was a major violation. He has obviously hurt many people over the course of his life while outside of prison. He has made it very clear that he does not care how many people that he will hurt in the future. He really only cares about himself. Because of what he did, he was sentenced to life in prison. That is the appropriate sentence. He should not get out a day before his death. That is the just outcome in this case. If the board would like to hear from the family.
Well, actually, before you continue, I would like to share something. And as I stated earlier, we're independent voting board members. And we take that independence very seriously. We don't discuss these cases before we come into the hearing room. But I will say as an individual, this is a heinous and unspeakable crime. And as a board member, there's a tendency to be a bit cold and clinical when we read a synopsis from the case, but considering the family's presence in the room, I was disturbed just describing the discovery of the body in front of family in such a detached way. It's a very disturbing case. So whoever would like to speak before the board, I'm sorry, do any fellow board members have any questions for the prosecutor? Whatever order you prefer. Good morning, ma'am. Can you state your name for the record?
Joan Johnson. I'm the stepmother of Diana. So I, her dad passed away. So I'm here myself. And from what I heard, I agree with everything she said. And there's no need to go on with everything. You know the circumstances. I'm just here. We're all here physically to show we just don't want you out. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Well, thank you for representing on behalf of the family. We have some individuals on the phone. I will ask Ms. Snyder first. If you can state your name.
Yes, this is Laura Snyder.
And is there anything that you would like to share with the board this morning, ma'am?
I did prepare a statement, although after hearing some of the details, I realized that some of my information may not be correct because we just don't have access to some of that information. First of all, thank you for allowing me to participate by phone. As you might expect, my hope is just to share some information that will persuade you to deny any type of change of custody status for Mr. Demarest.
Thank you.
It's primarily based on concern for any women in the community in which he might live or associate with. This is our fifth year that we participated in this type of hearing concerning his potential parole. In the past, along with my mother, Toby Johnson, who's there today, we typically try to introduce the board to Diana, of course, because she's unable to do so herself. We've highlighted her upcoming high school graduation and some of her plans for the future that she had at the time of her death, and we've emphasized, as you know, the violent nature of her death and what it was like during the weeks following her death until her body was found. And I guess today I'd just like to share a little bit about what these hearings themselves these are now a part of a routine part of our lives. And while we appreciate the need for them and we understand the statutory requirement and the purpose that they serve, it also introduces some aspects to our lives that we never really considered until the time that the parole hearings began. And those are things like simply trying to plan a budget around being able to be there if we can. Some of us live out of state, and so that's something we have to consider as part of our normal lives. When we get the letter, we usually have about a three-week time period between the time that we receive the letter and the date of the hearing. And during that time, we're having to switch personal plans and make travel plans. And sometimes even includes, especially for my mom, she's a self-employed barber. She's not paid anytime she's not at work. And so there's those types of impacts that his actions just continue to perpetuate for us. It's you know, another thing we try to do is make sure that we consider what we want to say and present to you at the hearing to make it meaningful without introducing some of the bitterness that, of course, we're trying to work around so that we're seen as sharing pertinent information for you to consider. There's nothing that can bring Diana back, but there's certainly something that you have the power to do to keep it from happening for anyone else. And I don't mention these things because they're a burden necessarily. We just take it very seriously. About our desire to be here is very serious, and there's a certain level of fear around should we decide not to appear. So, again, we just point out that there are lifelong consequences for Mr. Dimmer's actions, both to him and his victims. We know that as of his last hearing date, anyway, we did not know that he had done any programming or therapeutic, had sought any type of therapeutic treatment. We didn't know of his extensive history. Although I feel like each time we have these hearings, we learn a little bit more from what you share. His home was just a few miles from where my mother and my sister and her children still live, which includes female family members close to the ages of Diana and his previous victim. I feel like that, you know, should he decide to place blame since he's never taken accountability for his actions, it would be easy for him to locate us. Based mainly on the evidence presented during the trial, where he was found guilty, we believe the consequences of taking her life and showing no accountability and his limited programming should continue to be a full life sentence, and ask that you not approve any change of custody status for him. We also ask that the next hearing be set out what we believe is the maximum time, which is a year. That's all I have.
Thank you, ma'am. Do we have any questions from fellow board members? Okay, thank you, Ms. Snyder. I am now going to ask Ms. Johnson if she would like to share anything with the board. Ms. Johnson, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am.
And can you state your full name again?
I'm Jane Johnson. Yes. I'm Diana's mother.
Thank you, ma'am.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, and we certainly recognize how emotional this hearing is. You stated that you had a letter. Did you want to read that letter to the board? And that's certainly your choice.
I would like to try. I emailed it last week, and the previous four letters that I presented to the board in prior years, and it sounds like you did not receive that.
This is not to say we didn't receive it, and I certainly don't want to make excuses to the victim's representatives, but we are going through a lot of change in staff right now, so I do apologize for that. We are very glad that you can attend this hearing by telephone and speak before the board if you wish.
I will try. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am.
So the years before when I sent letters, I talked about Diana and how sweet she was, and very student. It was just wonderful. And so this year, the letter's different, and I'll read it. It says, for the fifth year, we are facing the possibility that Ronnie Dimmer could be released on parole, absolute discharge with furlough or hamlet. There is no way that any of these actions would be acceptable to any community where he would take up residence. The only place that can keep him from harming or killing others is prison. Please do not let him be released. When I know this hearing date is approaching, I become exhausted and depressed just thinking about it. I feel like I have to beg and plead for you to keep them as locked up. But if I don't do my part in addressing the issue of his release, and he is not kept confined, then another young woman will be murdered. And I was wrong, it's my fault. That is too much responsibility. I wish we were tired to think of it. Since the inmate has waived his right every year to appear at the clemency hearing, I expect that the same thing will happen this year. His case will get reviewed and you understand how violent and dangerous he is. Spending the last 30 years in prison will have done nothing to rehabilitate him. I think he abducted, raped, and murdered my daughter, that woman, to prove that he could commit this heinous crime and get away with it. I think that he believes that the reason he got caught for raping the woman in Flagstaff was because he let that victim live. If he was ever out of prison, it is my opinion that he would try once again and someone else would suffer and die. Being the parent of a murdered child does not get easier with the passing of time. Whether your child is 7, 17, or 27, when they are gone, you are left with a vacuum in your life. Unless you have experienced it, you will never imagine anything as senseless and devastating could happen to you. I ask you once again, please, do not let Lonnie get us out of prison. And thank you for letting me speak. It's just really hard. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. I know what I'm going to share as the acting board chair is not going to be any source of relief. I do personally wish, and I do envy, some of the other states in this country that have 3, 5, and 10-year set-offs, and unfortunately Arizona, we only have the mechanism for 1-year set-offs for cases that occurred after 1984. Just know that you have my sympathy for having to live through these hearings year after year. Thank you for appearing before this board.
Thank you.
Okay, ma'am. Any further statements?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Then, being as that this is a waived hearing, I will go right into my discussion. And simply state that based on Mr. Demarest's criminal history, including a past sexual assault, the heinous nature of this incident offense, and major discipline as recently as June 2018, I do not believe that Mr. Demarest would adhere to the conditions of release, nor do I believe that parole would serve the interest of justice. I would also like to say, as I've said in past deliberation, and I think about this all the time, the 25-year to life sentence has two big meanings for me. One is the very real possibility that an individual may arrive at their rehabilitation at a place where they can be safely transitioned back to the community. But it also means the very real possibility that an individual may serve life in prison. And as I stated, I do not believe that parole would serve the interest of justice, and that's where we'll begin the discussion. Okay, then I'm going to go ahead and make a motion. If you just give me 1 second. My motion is to deny regular parole, absolute discharge or home arrest, and based on the year of the offense, I'm asking for a 1-year set-off.
Second.
Agreed.
Seconded by the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse, agreed upon by the Honorable Mr. David Neal, and I'll check the box, release type denied, 412A, 411, or HA, which is to say regular parole, absolute discharge or home arrest. And my reasons for denial are as follows: serious and violent offense, loss of human life, serious and deviant offense, trauma to the victim, age of the victim, serious bodily injury. And this is for the instant offense. It states multiple victims. There are more than one, but I will check references to past crimes in a second. Criminal history. Prior criminal history. Repeat offender. Poor institutional behavior. Recent disciplinary infraction. Poor no release plan. No family or community support. And are there any other factors that my colleagues wish to add? Okay, then to make it clear, the board voted unanimously to deny regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest. We've asked for a 1-year set-off for Mr. Demarest. This should bring our hearing to a close.